everybody's worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, and so it's all the same to me. Think out chess, let the mystery be.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the newest episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, joined today by Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. And we also have Bill Graham.
Hey.
How's it going, everyone?
Good. I'm just wondering where you're going with this intro.
Oh, I just want to pay my respects to The Leftovers, which just wrapped up its second season.
Hold on. I'm going to start watching the shit out of that show, apparently.
Because of this music?
No, not because of this music. I have no idea what this music is and why it's playing still.
But yeah, this is
apparently, I was told that The Leftovers is like Lost if they actually had a clue what they were trying and going for.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested in that kind of dichotomy and like how that
I have
plays
kind
out.
Of a weird theory about it. What it's probably
well,
not
I've
that
also
weird.
I've also heard the first season is depressing as hell.
Oh, the first season is terribly depressing. Oh my god, it's depressing. But it's so good. And the second season is less depressing and a little more like together.
Yeah.
But I kinda miss the rawness of the first season, but the second season is one of the best things I've ever seen on television.
Wait, is this the intro song?
To the second season, yes.
Really? Okay, because I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about how even the intro song is oddly a little bit more upbeat, but if
a
you actually
bit,
listen
yeah.
to the words, like it's actually kind of demented and scary again.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the first season, when I was actually going to stop watching it. I was probably like, it wasn't until the Christopher Eccleston episode that I really got into it.
Oh no, I saw the first episode of the first season and I was like almost in tears at the end of it. And I was like, I'm in for the yeah. long haul.
This episode is brought to you by The Leftovers.
I'm just putting it out there into the universe because it's not for certain whether or not HBO is going to give it a third season.
Oh, come on, guys.
And I would like it to. So in my
I still don't understand the HBO model because, I mean, this show is actually getting traction as far as like word of mouth. Like I hear a lot of people talk, especially the first season got crazy like buzz and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's really no reason for them to ever cancel a show. They don't have advertisers to like.
That's
sell.
True.
So,
yeah, but like, see, like, I can't take another death after Hannibal.
Whoa!
I would be well. The fact that Hannibal is canceled.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
What she's talking about.
I just can't. I just don't want to. I just can't. I've invested so much, and it's like, don't take it away. Please.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's why I did it. For
right.
Curious.
Well, what did the so? Yeah, I need to read fan theories because I have a fan theory, which usually I don't.
Oh, fan
theories. And I'm curious to see how many other people.
I can't listen to this.
No, don't.
She's not going to say it.
Yeah, that's what's that?
I said you better not say it.
No, I'm not going to say it. But it's one of those things where I'm not the type of person to go into a show community and see if there are any like-minded fans.
I did that with Lost.
I actually am with the show.
That was the only show I ever did that with, and it was Lost.
With Lost?
Yeah.
That's because it was a mess, though.
It was. And
you're just
and
grasping at anything.
Yeah, you could just throw so many theories out there and just, like, roll with it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh, you'll love The Leftovers. You
yeah,
watch.
I think you'll really enjoy it. I think everyone will enjoy it, and they should all get to watching it so you can all be caught up for the third season. Right, HBO? All right. Well, anyway, this is the Film Stage Show where we usually talk about movies, so we will be doing that today. Two different movies to talk about. The first will be Krampus, the newest film, starring Adam Scott and directed by Michael Dougherty. And this is a Christmas horror comedy about the dark shadow to like Santa. who comes to take people away rather than to give people presents.
Yes, well, he's a revenge. Like,
yeah, he's
or not revenge, but like if you basically are not into the holiday spirit, he's gonna mess you up.
Gonna come at you.
Yeah.
And then we also have Bone Tomahawk, which is a Western, and I don't want to give too much away of the plot of Bone Tomahawk before we get into its spoiler section. So that's all I'm gonna say for now.
So good.
So good. So good, guys. Listen to our talk about the Bone Tomahawk, because it's going to be great, I feel. Other than that, follow us on Twitter, at Filmstage Show. Come and visit us on thefilmstage.com, where you can comment on these posts, and send us an email at podcast@thefilmstage.com. I think that's about it. We've already talked for 3 minutes now about The Leftovers. So let's get straight in to the actual podcast proper, and let us talk about Krampus.
Are you going to do the trailer?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Jesus. I paused it because I thought you had something to say.
No. Time of the
year, with the kids jingle bells. Merry Christmas!
Looks like Martha Stewart threw up in here.
This is delicious, honey.
A little dry.
Well, mine's delicious.
Mine's dry.
Do you want to trade?
It's the It's Christmas. It's Christmas. It's Christmas. Look at
with those holiday greens. So this is Krampus, and it tells the story of a family that's going through a bit of a rough Christmas that's about to get a little rougher when the holiday revenge demon known as Krampus comes to visit. This is, again, directed by Michael Dougherty, who directed Trick or Treat, the omnibus Halloween film. And it stars Adam Scott, Toni Collette, and David Koechner, amongst many others. So let's talk about it. Holiday horror humor. What did we think? Amanda Waltz, why don't you kick us off?
So I really enjoyed Trick or Treat. I think it's one of the best horror films about Halloween out there. It's
agreed.
It's really agreed. Yeah, it's great. I actually
There's
watched
not a
it again.
Lot, oddly enough. I feel like it doesn't have a lot of competition.
Well, I mean
about Halloween, yeah, specifically, but I mean, you know, there's obviously
Don't you
Halloween.
Dare say the Halloween films.
Yeah. Well.
I think there's a decent amount of at least set during Halloween. But I really enjoyed that film. It had a nice twisted sense of humor. For Krampus, though, it has a more mean-spirited sense of humor that I'm not sure quite works. I was actually really looking forward to this film.
Were all of us, I believe.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I wasn't, you know, chomping at the bit or anything, but it's nice to have. I like a good, like, Christmas sick flick, so. You know, this is probably like one of the only ones that's coming out this year. And a lot of people are talking about this film because of its practical in camera special effects. Especially, is it Weta, Peter Jackson's company?
Yeah, Weta or Weta or whatever it's
Weta.
Called.
Weta. I think it's Weta, yeah.
Yeah,
Peter Jackson, I guess.
It's Weta. Makes more sense with the
you
accent.
Know, do you know that my fiance and I, every now and then, will just like look at each other and one of us will say, "Is that you, Mrs. Sullivan?" Making fun of your god awful Boston accent by way of like old Brooklyn Jewish woman.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the lady from Monsters, Inc., the one
no,
that used to stamp the papers.
What's hilarious is that. Amanda, if you go back, people, and listen to the Black Mass podcast, Amanda's attempt to do Johnny Depp makes her sound exactly like that.
That kind of does. You're right. Wow. Oh man. Hey, That's man. Amazing. I was just trying to do my best Johnny Depp. But
it's all right. It's wicked hard.
Oh. Let's not do this.
Okay.
Not
we
right
can do
now.
It next week when we're talking about In the Heart of the Sea.
Okay, fair enough. So Weta obviously has their fingerprints all over this movie. There are a lot of puppets and sort of, I want to say, like costumes that, I don't know what you would call. I guess you would still call it puppetry. It would be like what Big Bird, like you have just like a full suit puppet. So there's a lot of that. And the only thing is, as much as I think the film relies a little too much on the dazzle of its practical effects, as opposed to the pacing and the writing, which are very neglected here. The first half of this film is just really kind of a slog. I don't really think that the character development, if any, is quite as impressive. And I actually read the film stage review of this movie by Michael Snydell. Sorry if I mispronounced your name, sir. But I actually agreed with a lot of his points. I mean, his biggest gripe with the film was that the characters are very one note, and it seems like the film has a lot of hate for its characters, but not in a way that is in any way productive. It just seems like it kind of wants to like hurry along and get through all this pesky character development in order to get to the juicier like action bits. And so, but even when it does get to the action bits, it kind of comes in these awkward spurts where I'm talking specifically to the attic sequence, where we go from basically seeing hardly anything to just a million monsters at once. And it is just a crazy mess. And while a lot of the creatures, like a lot of the creature effects are really cool. I mean, that Jack in the Box is a goddamn nightmare.
it's terrifying. Yeah.
You mean the clown snake Jack in the Box anaconda creature?
It's very like Tim Burton, like early Tim Burton-y, but not like stop motion wise. It's more sort of...
It reminds me of the sand snakes.
Yeah, like the sand snakes. But at the same time, we get these really very tangible, you know, they're there, you know, they're actually touching the characters and licking them with like weird, gross, long tongues, things like that. But at the same time, it's they seemed very like underdeveloped in that their faces don't move for the most part. There's an entire squad of elves that are basically just wearing kabuki masks.
But yeah, but they're supposed to be.
I know they are, but then you see Krampus, and Krampus just has this frozen death face. And
let's maybe not talk about Krampus yet.
Oh, shouldn't we? It's kind of in this movie, you guys.
No. Like just the way that he looks and stuff like that, because I kind of want to keep that for the spoiler section. And because he doesn't appear until way late in the film.
Right. Well, we see him
entirely true. We see him running over rooftops.
Yeah, we see him running from a distance.
We see his visage, but not his actual character.
I'll hold that off. But yeah, so it just seemed like you have all these other moving parts, and you had all this work put into the actual like the bodies, but yet you can't make a face that moves and blinks, and I don't know. It just seemed a little odd to me. And also, like, some of the things that happened didn't really... we'll get in. Maybe I'll save that for the spoiler section. But also, I just really didn't like any of these characters. And it sucks, too, because, like you said, you know, you have Adam Scott, you have Toni Collette, you have Alison Tolman, who's great.
Yep.
But there's this very sort of... very... like conservative versus liberal, very tired jokes, sort of going back to like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, you know, David Koechner is the macho asshole conservative gun nut and Adam Scott is the meek progressive guy.
I mean, like that's just written on their faces. Like, I don't think
it's just kind of like the jokes related to their whole shtick. I mean, they're so predictable. You can see them coming from a mile away. They're not funny because they're extremely tired. I mean, there's nothing fresh about it. I don't know. And it just seemed like, as a whole, I just don't think the movie quite worked. It didn't scare me. It didn't really make me laugh. I can maybe think of like two moments where I actually laughed. That woman. Oh, you also have the stock naughty old person character in Conchata Ferrell, who a lot of...
Yeah, the aunt.
Yeah, Aunt Dorothy. And if some people may know her as Berta from Two and a Half Men.
Mm-hmm.
She's
God,
made kind of a career out of this.
Why would anyone know that?
The people in the row in front of me did, because they got real excited.
Lord.
No
That's
surprise.
Very sad to hear.
No surprise. They were all like wearing hooded sweatshirts and sports jerseys to the movie theater. But anyway.
That's what you get for living in Pittsburgh.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, I found it a bit disappointing, especially, and I don't want to necessarily compare it to Trick or Treat, but Trick or Treat
it is fair
better.
It is fair though, because it's the same guy. It's the same kind of concept of like, let's really hone in and focus on like a specific holiday and kind of the tropes mm-hmm. and kind of the things that go along with it. Because even though this film is definitely about Krampus and kind of that mythology, it's also very much about Christmas itself. You know?
Oh, right. Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. So
beats you over the head with it.
Sure. Especially that kind of opening sequence with the Black Friday sales kind of, you know, montage. And it's just like, oh, man. Okay.
can I present a weird theory to you?
Sure.
Yeah.
So their last name is Engel. Like.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Marxist Friedrich Engel.
Okay.
Is this a very blatant commentary on
Marxism?
Yeah. Well, not Marxism necessarily, but just this idea of Christmas as being about family when really it's about capitalism and consumerism.
I mean, I don't think they make a big enough deal about their last name. Maybe that's like a joke, but I don't think they're trying to say anything.
Oh, I'm not saying that it's, I think the Engel is kind of like wink, wink, like, hey guys, isn't this cute what we're doing right now? I think it is definitely about this idea of, because the families themselves, like I said, it's like conservative liberal. It's like this classist thing where they're the rich family. And then Alison Tolman and Dave Koechner are,
well, they're
supposedly
constantly
poor, but they have like a huge Hummer and tons of guns. I'm like, well, they can't be poor.
I don't think they're poor. I think they're like white trash.
I don't know. I just thought that was a little.
That was also a very nice shotgun.
Yeah, that doesn't come cheap. So
well,
I don't know.
He also had like a built-in carrying or like case inside
the
Hummer.
Sweet.
So I mean, it's like okay, like you didn't just, you know, have it mounted on the back of your windshield.
No, man, shepherd's got to protect his flock.
He's got class. He keeps it in a little sliding thing.
Yeah, little sliding drawer. That's amazing.
Which basically means
you cannot ever go grocery shopping in that thing. So
Well, you can. It's a lockbox.
What? No. I'm saying like you're taking up like 50% of your space by.
I would say maybe 25.
Stupid thing. Okay. Well.
Anyway, Bill, I'll let you. That's all I really have to say about it.
I gotcha.
For now. But all I'll throw it to you.
Bill,
can I throw
like
the ball to Bill, Brian?
Yeah. Throw the ball to Bill.
Sure.
You're slowly usurping this show from me.
Anyways.
Did you want to go first, Brian?
No.
Why don't you go first?
No, because I'm a polite host and I never go first.
Oh, okay. All right.
Except I might. No, I'm probably not going to go first for In the Heart of the Sea. I'm going to wait until everyone else is done.
No, we want you to be the finale. We want you to be the finishing touch.
The cherry. Okay. Anyways, I have to say, I agree with a lot of what Amanda is saying here. First off, I came into this film as a huge fan of Michael Dougherty and loving Trick or Treat. Every year for Halloween, I host the screening of Trick or Treat at my local Alamo. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a film that I really, really enjoy. And it's got so many great, memorable classic lines, whether it's like Charlie Brown is an asshole or just all of these these different, you know, moments that are just so good and so great. And it really kind of takes a lot of pride in like setting up the characters and paying off these individual stories and stuff like that. And I gotta say, I agree. I had heard that this film was kind of had a mean-spiritedness that it never quite recovers from. And I don't think it ever tries to recover from that. I think it's very odd. And, you know, spoiler alert a little bit, but there are a lot of people that die in this film that I was not expecting at all. I mean, there's a certain amount of, you know, deaths that you expect from a horror film, but this one was just way above what I was expecting at all. And it starts like that fairly early into the film. It doesn't make any bones about that. It does have a kind of like really mean-spiritedness that I think is very odd tonally, because it tries to be funny, and it never quite makes that leap, even though you might be able to argue that this film has a better cast than Trick or Treat. I mean, Trick or Treat has some gem people in it. They weren't all that big at the time, but it's a shame.
Trick or Treat has a better cast, actually.
See, and you know, there's an argument to be made. So, but it's really interesting that he has this cast that isn't doing all that great of work because of the characters themselves. They are very one-dimensional. They are very rote. And like I said, there's a moment where one of the young kids is basically being picked on by his two cousins that are basically – and even this is weird. It seems like he – obviously understands that Santa isn't real and yet is still kind of holding this kind of idea of him. And these two older cousins are like,
should we put a spoiler for the fact that Santa's not real? Cause like there might be little kids listening and I don't want to.
Some young cinephiles listening right now.
Yeah. So, you know, like really young fucking kids who like to listen to this podcast.
Speaking of kids, here's why I think this is one of the things I liked about Trick or Treat that I didn't mind seeing in this film was just straight up murdering some kids. I mean, I like a movie that, and I mean, done well, it can be really, I don't know. Like I said, it can be kind of like,
it can be satisfying.
Yeah, yeah. It can be.
No,
really,
we get it, Amanda. You love it when kids are killed.
Oh, I love it when kids are murdered in movies.
Absolutely love it when kids are killed.
Love it. More the better.
So, like I said, so this kid is basically the linchpin of the entire film, and he's got this note that he's written to Santa, and the two other older cousins that are basically bullying him the entire time steal it and start reading it out loud. And at some point, like two or three words in, you might expect a grown up, an adult, to just like slap them upside the head and be like, hey, quit. Like, stop this. Like, quit being a bully in front of the entire dinner table. And yet nobody stops it. And they read the entire letter from front to back. And you're like, what is this film? I don't understand how it can just tonally be so off that, you know, one of the grown-ups wouldn't step in at that point, at any point during that situation. And they don't... It's like I said, it's a weird film in that way.
All the adults at that point are wrapped up in their own shit.
Right.
Yeah, but everybody's listening.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I.
Well, they start to listen when they hear their names.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the movie that bothered me the least.
Well, that was the part where they could have really done a lot with, because the kid is basically calling, you know, he's basically what is Conchata Ferrell, like Aunt Dorothy says, that kid's just telling the truth or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just saying what everybody's, what's already like very, really obvious.
Yeah.
And his note is actually kind of nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
oh, yeah, it's touching.
It is. And it's like I said, it's this weird kind of juxtaposition of like, it's a very bullying moment that none of the parents or none of the adults, like any of the adults, the grandma, any of them could have like stepped in, and yet none of them really do. And yet it's also this kind of touching moment. I think almost it was like they needed that note to happen and they couldn't quite figure out how to have it read out loud, and so they kind of awkwardly put that moment in.
Yeah.
And so the other thing I just want to say is that yes, the special effects are fantastic, and they are a little odd. I thought the elves were pretty odd, but the animated part of Krampus's story is really pretty unique, the way they did it. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this more and more now than ever before, I think, in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. And I think it really kind of kicked off with like the Deathly Hallows.
Oh, yeah.
Where they had like a long bit of like Voldemort's backstory and stuff like that, that was animated. And so I think they pull it off well here. And that story is pretty crazy, and they build up the character, the legend, the mythology around Krampus so much, and he's not really fully revealed. He doesn't really make a presence in this film for any significant, you know, moment until like an hour and 15 minutes into the film. It's He has all of these minions, these little puppets, things like that, the Jack in the Box, different characters that all kind of do his bidding. And so it's interesting the way that they kind of allow him to kind of come in at the very, you know, last moment and kind of one up everybody. But yeah, other than that, I will say that this is definitely one of the films I was looking forward to most because of my love of Trick or Treat and because of my love of what Doherty had done. And, you know, he had finally gotten like a $15 million, $20 million budget. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hooray, like this guy. And it's a wide release. And oddly, you know, you didn't touch on this, but one thing that I've been kind of trumpeting for the last like week and a half, 2 weeks is this film didn't screen for critics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's like one of the reasons we decided we kind of wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't screen for critics. There was no national publicity tour.
That's strange.
And like I've seen very few interviews with Doherty about this film since it's come out. And yet I saw trailers for it. I saw some promo materials for it, but outside of that, you wouldn't realize that this was a national release. So,
well, and it's strange too, because it's not, I mean, it's not like, I don't know. I mean, I don't understand why it wouldn't screen for critics.
I have no clue. I have no answer, because the early buzz.
Because it's a horror movie. Horror movies never screen for critics.
No, they do. Mm, they do.
Do they?
They do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do they have to? They never have
to. No, they don't have to.
This movie made a bunch of money.
It did. It did end up at number 2 in the box office. It made like $21 million or something like that. So it's already pretty much made up its production budget. Of course, you know, there are arguments, or not arguments, but the ins and out of Hollywood film production is basically you double the budget because they got to do overseas, they got to do marketing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then so basically they got to make back double their budget. At least, like, sometimes it's even like 1.5 times their budget. But yeah.
So getting off topic a little bit, you actually reminded me of two things that I wanted to bring up. And actually, the film stage review touched on this a little bit, too, is the troubling gender politics involving the two daughters In terms of basically saying that it's bad that they're tomboys.
I don't think it's saying that it's bad that they're tomboys. I think it's saying something about how the dad is raising them in a certain way because he's dissatisfied with them.
But it's,
I agree.
But to say that it's not okay for them, for little girls to be tough, but it's okay for little boys to be sensitive and believe in Santa Claus, I think is a little troubling.
I don't think it's saying that girls can't be tough. I'm saying it's like, don't be an asshole. Like, they're not,
yeah. No,
they're,
I'm not
tough.
Saying,
they're fucking
I'm
dicks.
I'm not condoning bullying, but...
Oh, it really sounds like you are.
Well,
like,
you
that's
know
your, that's right. Your metric of toughness.
No, but what I'm saying is that it is... It's sending a very weird message.
They are played for laughs. The way they look, the way they act, right. Stuff like that. Because
basically,
when you first,
like, let's humiliate these two female characters.
Well, when you first meet them, I think they say something along the lines of, "Here are your two, or here are the girls." And then you look at them, and yeah. It's very obvious that I think it's the mom that kind of gives an awkward look, like, "Oh, what?" Like, I haven't seen y'all in, like, you know, 5 years or something like that. And it's,
yeah,
like,
because
oh.
They see each other every Christmas. She just hates them. Like, shit. Like,
I don't know. I felt an awkward gaze in the way they kind of play up the tomboy kind of image of them. I felt it was kind of played for laughs. Now, as the film kind of rolls along, it's not as much, but yeah.
It's a little troubling. Also troubling.
They're not tomboys. They're like, their father is training them to be men.
And what's wrong? That's what's troubling about it, is that it's this idea of, like, this is, never mind. You know what? We're gonna waste way too much time on this argument.
I understand what you're saying, but it's
later.
It's not like they love playing baseball like Lex.
We're not doing this. No. We're not doing this. I'm telling you, it's gonna take like 15 minutes.
Okay.
Also troubling. Here's something we can't agree on, hopefully, is the really awful CGI gingerbread men.
I thought
they looked terrible.
In, like, one scene.
Yeah, in one scene. I think they're mainly played for laughs throughout, and so it kind of works. But it is an interesting juxtaposition, because it's like, look at all these practical effects. Look at everything that's done on screen, and then, oh...
Yeah, like, compared to what else is in the film, it just looks really out of place.
It's tonally dissonant.
Anyway, but yeah.
Okay.
Those are the last 2 points.
Everything that y'all have said. In terms of, like, pacing and general story... I was going to say story thickness, but that's just a terrible way to say that. Thin plot. It's a very, like, there's not a lot of... Mm-hmm. You know, in that you don't need a crazy huge plot. Just make it like a home invasion, kind of like Straw Dogs, only it's Krampus instead of a bunch of tough British guys. But they go for a lot more. And honestly, when people kept coming through that door, I was like, you have way too many characters.
Yeah.
Like, this could just be a family, and that would be fine.
Sure.
But
yeah.
they have... A father, a mother, a grandmother, and then
I think
two
she's
children.
The aunt. Oh, yeah, the grandmother. Oh, my God. I can't believe I forgot about her.
Yeah,
the grandmother
one
is,
that
like, the best
only
character.
Speaks German.
Yeah. But then
which is just such a weird, like, little touch that she only speaks German throughout the film. And you're just like, it's like,
oh, come on.
who is this? Like, why? Why is this happening?
Right. But then you have another husband, another wife, a crazy aunt. Twins, another child, and a baby, and a dog.
Don't forget the bottom.
That's not even doubling the amount of characters you have. That's like another 150% worth of a cast. it's just kind of crazy. And you would think that there'd be a steady progression of people getting picked off, but there's not. There's like a spurt, and then nothing, and then nothing, and then just a melee. And you know, there are certain things that happen that are fun. A couple of fight scenes I liked. You know, I appreciated the kind of nutso energy of it, and the fact that again, in a thing like this, you don't need well-drawn characters. You just need characters who stay consistent and respond in a way that their character would. But yeah, it was weird that it didn't have more flow.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked some of it. I would say it's a C+, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the film overall, but I can't see this being a film that I return to very often, if at all.
In spite of that, y'all want to go into spoilers, correct?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so is anyone recommending that people go out and see this in theaters?
I've recommended it to friends since seeing it, just because I think it's an interesting conversation to have about like what the film actually pulls off and what it is. But
I think if you like
a blanket like recommendation, if you're looking for some horror right now during Christmas time, go for it.
If it were like a crazier movie, I would say this would be the perfect go out, go Christmas shopping, get drunk, go see a movie. But it's just not crazy enough. I don't know. It just doesn't. I actually didn't feel that energy at all. I don't know.
That's because, like you said, it comes out in spurts.
Yeah.
So like there are moments of it, but it lulls.
Yeah,
really
it doesn't sustain itself.
Right. I don't know if I would necessarily recommend it, to be honest. And I feel bad saying that just because I really loved his first movie. But
yeah.
And I wanted to make more movies.
Well, I mean, this one has been fairly successful.
All right.
It came out on Friday. We're recording this on a Tuesday, and it's already made back more than its production budget.
All right. So
that's pretty good.
He's fine. He's fine. He'll come back. All right. Yep. Fine enough.
All right. So spoilers for a little bit. And I don't know, what do we want to spoil? Bill, you were freaking out about talking about what Krampus looks like.
Yeah, because like they don't ever show him in the trailers, and
yeah, but it's not like he has a face of a relative or something. He's just got a
but I think that's like the fun part of a lot of these like monster horror films is just like the final big baddie kind of reveal,
but, I mean,
and stuff like that. When they show him full face, that doesn't happen until, like, I mean, I think even the first time we see him in full-fledged costume and everything like that, full frame, we don't even see his face then. I think, for the most part, the grandma is staring, like, off-screen.
Mm.
Well, I mean, I would say that the bulk of his power comes from his horns and his size and his slumped overness. So, like, seeing the twisted rictus of whatever carven wooden mask he's wearing is not that important to me.
I think it is, because I felt like the face was kind of a letdown. I was hoping I feel like he should have been much more demon-like. Instead, he looks like an old like haggard Santa.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
that's the point. He's a rigor mortis Santa.
Rigor mortis Santa.
rigor mortis Santa.
I love that.
You're welcome. I don't know. I didn't see it as a letdown, because he's still fucking Krampus. He's got cloven hooves and he's trailing iron chains with hooks on them.
Seeing him actually made me think about how much more frightening, because I think they're very similar in scale and design, how much more frightening the Ghost of Christmas Future was from Muppet's Christmas Carol. That thing is horrific.
Well, I was thinking that they wouldn't even show Krampus's face, which
I would
have been
fine
with.
I would have preferred that.
I don't understand how you can find that such a letdown.
There are two of us.
Did you guys like the ending?
I thought it was fun in a Twilight Zone-y, Outer Limits-y kind of way.
I will say the best reaction in my theater, there was this teenage couple sitting at the very end of the aisle, and they were quiet the entire time. And when that kid wakes up, the boy very loudly said, "All was all a dream. This shit is soft. I want my money back." And I was like, oh, man, I agree with you.
It is soft. I want my money back.
He was so angry.
I can't believe that he was like legitimately angry about that.
I mean, it was soft.
I got
though.
It. I got it.
Yeah, but okay. Well, then how did he react when the reveal happened?
With the Krampus reveal?
What? No, when
find
out that it was a dream. They're trapped in a demon snow globe. Nope.
That's the dream.
Yeah, they're trapped in a demon. So I think it was probably just like, I don't even give a shit after this, which is how I felt. I was just like, after he woke up from a dream, I was like, I know there's going to be another twist. I really don't care.
But that's the point. Oh, my God.
I didn't like it. I thought it was dumb.
Hold on. You think now we have something to talk about in spoilers.
What color were his eyes?
Hold on. You think that the neighborhood itself is now just in a snow globe? Like,
oh, no.
I thought. I thought basically it's the way that Krampus is going to keep an eye on this family from now on. And so he's going to be able to just look at it and make sure they're acting right because of the fact that, you know, he had to come down on them. And so now he's got all of these different snow globes all in his like little workshop where he's got to make sure every Christmas the year he's checking in on them.
No, he has trapped them in a hell snow globe in his, I guess, South Pole workshop. Are you kidding me? It's not a
is
magic
that your
mirror.
Fiance laughing in the background?
Yes, that is my fiance laughing in the background.
Because your theory is batshit.
I thought the same thing.
Hold on. All right, we're gonna get an outside opinion. Baby, can you just scream? Am I right?
Yeah.
Well, did she hear my theory?
Just because I love you.
Okay.
But because you're
pretty
right, yeah.
So, Bill. One moment, ladies and gentlemen. Bill thinks that it's like a magic mirror that he's keeping tabs on them in the real world.
Did he watch the movie?
Oh, Bill.
Oh, snap.
Oh, snap. Gauntlet down.
I actually thought the same, Brian. I thought they were trapped in a snow globe.
Yeah,
which would be hellish. That is like being trapped with your family forever.
Right.
Like
his
internal Christmas.
I want Christmas to be like it used to be. And so Krampus is like, all right, you little shit. Here, stuck in a wicked evil loop inside of a murderous snow globe because after I came and terrorized you and dragged you all to hell, that's where I put you.
Excellent.
Okay, I can see that. But so are you saying that the days still go forward? Because it's definitely Christmas and the advent calendar was definitely leading up to that point.
I'm telling you that they are stuck in a hell loop where every day they will go to sleep and every morning they will wake up in the perfect Christmas morning.
See, this is why
and
I
then
don't
they
think
will
it's
remember
dumb.
The devil took them.
This is why I think it's dumb, though, because it does seem like they are aware that there's something up.
Yeah,
because
as soon
as
when he gets the bell, and they all kind of look at him and
they're remembering everything.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. I don't know.
So why would it be a loop?
That
because they're
stopped.
Gonna forget, or now they know and they're just stuck that way forever.
I don't know. I like my theory.
I don't like your theory at all. That never occurred to me that it could possibly be like a magic mirror situation. Like he's snow globe.
I will say they're
Skyping
both
them.
Valid theories.
Well, my big thing is spotlight. My big thing is that
Krampus is shining a spotlight.
What was really wigging me out was the fact that there were other characters that were involved in this situation. So like there's the DHL guy and there's like, I guess, a guy that had a snowplow and like other families in the neighborhood, which they do a good job of like setting up that the immediate neighbors are away on vacation. And I was like, ah, cool. Like, you're getting around that. Fine. And then they started throwing in all these people that were very obviously not away on vacation. And you're like, what? I don't understand how that's happening.
Which is why
I think the snow globe thing and he's keeping tabs on them.
So you believe that everything was all a dream?
No, what? No, I don't think it's all a dream. I think so all think that shit happened.
Krampus and murdered everyone and then turned it back?
I think he reset it and basically
Krampus
said,
is crazy powerful, Brian.
You better behave from this point on. I'm keeping tabs on you.
Okay, I think he stole the family, put them in Christmas jail, and then reset the other world back to how it was. Because if you, when you, you know, this is crazy. Why are we talking about this?
This goddamn ending.
The lights in the neighborhood all go out except for their house, and then their house's lights go out.
Because it's badly written. That's why nothing makes sense.
Okay. So do we want to talk about a really well-written movie?
Yes. Okay. For the love of God.
That's it for Krampus. Krampus is dead. Long live Krampus. So let's talk about Bone Tomahawk, which is a Western that is directed and written by S. Craig Zahler. And this has, guys, one hell of a cast.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We got, let's start at the top, Kurt Russell.
Mm. Yeah.
Patrick Wilson.
That mustache.
Matthew Fox. Richard Jenkins. You kidding me here?
Yeah.
David Arquette's in there for a
bit. I didn't even recognize Richard Jenkins. I was watching it with my dad last night, and he was like, that's Richard Jenkins. And I was like, no, it's not. And then I kept looking at him, and I was like, they put some really wicked makeup on him.
Yeah, or something. I don't know what the hell. But
I guess maybe
I've never
seen him with a beard, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I know that I had a serious moment where I thought that one of the people was played by Slim Pickens.
That's what my dad said.
He died.
Slim Pickens.
Yeah, he's straight up.
Yeah, the opening scene.
Yeah. I was like, that is Slim goddamn Pickens, and it's not because he's dead.
It's that the movie actor, isn't it? Or who's the guy with David Arquette?
Buddy is played by Sid Haig.
Sid Haig. Oh, Sid Haig.
Okay. Well, anyway, here is the trailer for Bone Tomahawk.
Lean back. Right there. Bracing. This is going to penetrate.
Good evening. Civilized towns, you look a man direct in the face when you talk to him.
This isn't comfortable.
Well, it's not supposed to be.
Here's a situation.
All right. Bone Tomahawk. Man, did we let you go first last time? So, Bill, what about you? Why don't you tell us what you thought of Bone Tomahawk? And let's... Actually, before we even do that, should people see this movie knowing absolutely as little about it as possible?
Yes.
Yes. Yes? Bill?
Yes. Yes.
Great. Okay. So, everyone who hasn't seen Bone Tomahawk, shut down your podcast player. Quit work, go home, and see Bone Tomahawk immediately, and then come back here. You are hurting yourself if you listen to any more of this without having seen the movie. Cool. So, Bill, what were your thoughts on Bone Tomahawk?
So, this is a film that played at Fantastic Fest earlier this year, and it had a lot of buzz kind of coming out of that. I think it might have screened somewhere else afterwards, but it was really kind of during Fantastic Fest that this kind of came onto my radar. And I guess, okay, so you don't want to reveal kind of the wrinkle in this, right?
Correct.
Because I think the trailer gives it away. I didn't play the whole trailer, did I? Okay. No, you didn't. I also think all the buzz surrounding it, because this film is kind of sold as two things, right? It's sold as a mashup.
Yeah.
It's sold as a mashup. So I think revealing that what the other half of that mashup is isn't necessarily a big like spoiler.
Okay, well, we've already warned off all the people who are going to listen to us. So it begins as your common Western,
mm-hmm,
and turns into a horror film.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. So I really love, I think obviously there are two parts to this film, and I think he absolutely nails the Western. I love the tracking aspects. I love the setup of, you know, the little the piano player is hilarious. The way he has like this hidden sign that he flips over and you're like, ah, this guy. Okay. The setup and all of the Western aspects are really, really quite a lot of fun. And I think the payoff works when you get some distance from it. It's a weird film in the way that it kind of plays and teases out the horror aspects of it. And I gotta say this. So S. Craig Zahler, he has written quite a few scripts. He's also written some books. And he's just kind of a screenwriting machine, apparently. And he wrote this script that was a blacklist script. I don't know if y'all know what the blacklist is, but it's basically like the top unproduced screenplays voted by Hollywood executives each year. And so these are films that sometimes end up in production shortly thereafter, or even are in. Like I remember talking to what was the film with the girl from Scott Pilgrim that came out earlier this year that was about cults.
Faults.
Yeah, Faults. So that was actually a blacklist script, and they got onto the blacklist while they were in production, and they were like, "Oh, this is awkward." who did this? Because it's not like a publicist is shopping, like sending around the screenplay for, you know, producers to vote on. It's more like they send out a survey to all these, you know, executives, and the executives send it back. And it's kind of, you know, the people that write the films, stuff like that, they have no say in this, who ultimately makes the list. And so, yeah, they were in production when they got on to the blacklist. Anyways, that was a long rant. So he wrote a screenplay called Battle of Briggerborns or something like that. And it's just a straight Western with a very kind of revenge thriller kind of aspect to it. That's fantastic. And so this guy obviously has kind of his heart set in the Western, and I think it definitely plays out in the way that this film opens up and the characters. And yeah, it's got a hell of a cast, and they're doing some very fun work. It's also a film that doesn't have a lot of music. It doesn't have like a score that's kind of being ominous in any way, or, you know, setting things up a lot. It's a film that kind of like lets itself breathe. And I gotta say, considering that this is his first film, he's got a lot of confidence in what he's doing. And apparently this film was like made for like $1 million or something like that. And
yeah, I looked it up and it was 1.8.
Yeah, something like that. It looks amazing. And this is a guy that he's a former cinematographer, so he obviously understands how to make a film look really well for a small budget. And so, you know, it really kind of plays on that. In you just look at this film and then you look at some other films that cost, you know, $20, $30, $100 million, and you're just like, I don't understand, like how are you 100 times this budget and you don't even look half as good?
Right. Like I would say like basically most of the Marvel films.
Ooh, I wouldn't say anything about the Marvel films. I would say something about some of the DC films, but that's
what,
neither
what
here nor there.
What DC films?
like Superman?
Superman?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So we got that one.
Green Lantern?
Ugh. Oh God. Well, so I don't. To me, there's no like DC films universe yet. You know,
yeah.
You know what
I'm saying? No, well, there literally is not yet. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're working
not
on
until
it.
So Batman. Anyways, so I think we can get into it more in spoilers, but this is a film that is a slow burn. So if you're coming, I kind of came into this knowing the horror aspect and knowing that the film kind of gets batshit crazy, and I was expecting it to have kind of a fun tone throughout, and it plays it very straight. It's a serious drama, you know, of them basically tracking down this guy's wife, and it doesn't play it for laughs at all. It's a very serious kind of Western film in that way, and then it meets the horror aspects, and like I said, I think he does a good job with it. I don't know if it works as well as I wished it had, and yet thinking back on it, I enjoy it more and more. So that's my kind of convoluted thoughts, because we haven't gotten into spoilers yet.
All right. Amanda, what do you think?
Oh, man, this was a surprise for me. Wow. So when I first read about this movie and I read that it was a cannibal Western, I had my doubts, just because a lot of movies, I guess there's just so many movies that come out that have these like similar plots, I guess I would say, where it's cannibals or it's zombies or it's something like that. And they're just sort of faux campy, or these faux B movies, bad on purpose. And
did this all kind of start with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies when that book came out?
Oh, it started way before that.
I thought it's
been going on for a while. I think it probably more so started with like the Grindhouse double feature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you know, so it's just making movies bad on purpose. Man, it is not. It is a fantastic film. It is delightful. The dialogue is amazing. And wow, Matthew Fox really just coming out of left field.
Where did he come from?
He was amazing in this film. And
he's very good. Yeah.
So I watched this with some friends and I didn't even know Matthew Fox was in it. And you know, somebody was asking what the film was about. And he went through the roster, you know, Kurt Russell and everybody. When he said Matthew Fox, I was like, Matthew Fox. He's great in this movie. I have to say, he's probably my favorite character. He's just this, like, Western dandy Indian killer. It's insane.
His whole look and mystique is utterly bizarre.
Oh, it and is. He's just, yeah. He's incredible.
White
like,
suit.
When he first
White
walked,
suit? What?
Yeah, white suit. When he first walks into that saloon, I was just like, oh my God, I love you so much. But yeah, it is. I think that it has just great characters, and it's not, you can tell this is a writer's film. This man knows how to write dialogue, and it is just not dialogue that is even really relevant to the plot. There's just strings of conversations between, I would say, like Richard Jenkins and Kurt Russell's character, where them just banter. It's just wonderful banter.
But it's also banter that like beautifully builds up the characters.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I love
a film like this, you would expect it to just be plot driven.
Yeah.
Which is just such a great, it's just a great surprise to see like, oh, this is actually just these like characters just, you know.
That helps the hell out of things when like stuff starts to go nuts.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Like it's so great because you think you're just like, look at these zany characters and you know these two don't get along and these are best friends that sometimes have problems, but then when shit gets real, I guess is a non-spoiler way to say it, like
oh, shit
all
gets
of that
really
character
real.
Building really comes to play and like
oh yeah
makes you invest in what's happening.
And it is, it's a Western. I mean, like Bill was saying, it's still very much a true Western. You know, I think the production design in general is great. The costumes are great. The cinematography is just breathtaking. There's a scene in particular where it's all of them together. Right. It's like their posse riding out and it's just this beautiful, just, you know, long shot of them. And just against the horizon, and it looks so beautiful. And You know, it's just such a like lovingly crafted film, and I really wasn't expecting it to be as funny as it was. It's incredibly funny.
It's super funny.
It's so funny. So that was just, like I said, just all around a wonderful surprise. Just, you know, and it's not, obviously it's not the kind of humor that, it's not zany humor. It's not, you know, slapstick humor. It's not anything. It's just this great sort of, like you said, like very character driven, very sort of like natural, almost like absurd. It's a very absurd movie in a lot of ways.
Sure. Yep.
Which I just love. I love absurdity.
Well, I think part of it is just, I guess, Matthew Fox's character kind of comes into that town every so often. So he probably like disappears for 2 months. And
well, because he knows Patrick Wilson's wife.
Yeah. And then he comes back into town and stuff like that. And so it's a very interesting film in the way that it kind of sets up the small town kind of feel. So all of these characters are well, you know, maybe they know each other too well, or they have avoided each other on purpose, you know? And it's like, I don't really like you. I don't know why we're doing this all together, but, you know, we got a mission.
Yeah, and it's too, I think, maybe getting away from the non-horror aspects of the film, I think what I also like is that there's just enough gore in this to really make it interesting and really give it some bite, I guess pun intended.
It's not a bloodless, like, John Ford kind
sure.
of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Someone gets stabbed definitely... and there's blood on their shirt for the rest of the movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it definitely pays up, you know, the horror aspects of it for sure.
Oh right. Right.
So I mean, let's see. What was the last Western I saw before this? I think it was Slow West.
And this speaking movie, of which, I watched that today.
Did you like it?
I liked it a lot.
Okay, great.
It's on my list.
Okay, well, Amanda will understand. This movie starts off a teeny little bit like Slow West.
Yeah.
You know, you got a bunch of kooky characters and they're all talking and it's all like the stylized kind of language and it's beautiful and it's wonderful. And like, so I was kind of just expecting it to stay that and I was cool with it. I guess I forgot like the cold open and I figured, you know, there's some bad stuff happening. Someone's going to ride into town. The places this movie goes are nearly indescribable. And it comes not particularly out of nowhere, but not from somewhere you'd expect. And I loved it. It's just outside of my top 10 of the year. And I don't know, like, all these characters are great. And it was legitimately like this thing where I was watching it with my fiance and every like new character introduction, I was like, oh my God, I know that person. Who is this? Who is this? That's the principal from Back to the Future. It's not Slim Pickens. Slim Pickens, it turns out, is dead. But I mean, you know, there was a lot of stuff like that. And I was just kind of blown away. And it just took me like a while to really like catch my breath. And I was just having so much fun jiving with all these characters. And you know, Patrick Wilson threatens Matthew Fox, and it's kind of funny. And then the plot begins to happen. And even still, I'm like, okay, now it's just a quartet. Yeah, quartet's the right word. Riding off into the sun to go save the people who've been taken from town. And the shift is so immediate and so sudden that it hurts because you've gotten to know these people in a certain way and then everything begins to happen to them. And I checked the time. I don't know that I'm getting this completely right, but I think like the final act is like 40 minutes long.
Really?
I think so.
I'd say it's close to that. Yeah.
From the point where they arrive at the place they are going, you know what I'm saying? Then That's all the hijinks.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. And that 40 minutes was the longest and most intense 40 minutes of my life. Because no one ever felt safe. Nothing ever felt certain. And I was just confused and baffled, but so totally on board. Because one of the best things this movie does is that when the tone changes, the style and the characters stay exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
The characters are responding in a way. What was that?
It's paying it off.
Yeah. Well, the characters are responding in a way that you come to expect to a situation that you could never expect, which means that the writer, who is the director, had a great handle on the characters. But not only that, he's not like shaking the camera or adding violins and strings. There's like no music in this movie.
Oh, I love it.
And so you're visually still grounded, you're character-wise still grounded, but the situation has become fucking crazy. And I just loved it. And you have a slight idea of what will be coming because there is a character who says, I think I know who took these people.
Well, it's Indian Joe from Fargo.
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I loved him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, I mean, he was good for the short amount of time he was in this movie. But yeah,
I was going to say something about, the horror aspect,
Just hold on for a second. Let me finish and then we can,
all right.
Go. And yeah, the great part is also that the pace doesn't change either.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like everything begins happening all at once. Like, the movie is still taking its time. Up to and all the way to the end. Like, the final scene of this movie is not really hinting that, like, it's a final scene or that everything's over now or that, you know, now we just have to rush and get out of here. Like, all the scenes seem to take the same amount of time. The pacing, the people, they all take the same amount of time. And it's just, it's really gorgeous to see a director, and this is his first feature film, right?
It is.
Yeah, directing, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, for his first feature, for the characters to be this well-drawn, for the pace to be this, and I'm going to say deliberate, but in this case, deliberate doesn't mean slow, like it usually does to my pretentious self. Like, it's just a deliberate pace. He has such control, he has such knowledge, he's so good that I was just like stunned. And today we began doling out end of year lists at the film stage, so we'll be doing write-ups, and I could not sign my name to writing about Bone Tomahawk fast enough. It's like, you're goddamn right that I'm going to write why this is one of the best directorial features of the year, like the first time director. I mean, like, it's amazing,
like debut. Yeah,
oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's such a, like, and Kurt Russell is just, he's just Kurt Russell, man. He's still Kurt Russell. He's still doing his Kurt Russell thing. He hasn't wavered. You know, it's just so wonderful to just see him still be so just commanding in films. He's having, like, another moment, and it's just so incredible.
Well, he's having a... Keaton moment. He's having a Keaton moment, right?
He's back.
He's Keating it up. I was going to say, this is like the second or third movie we've seen him in this year, and he's fantastic.
Because it was Fast 7, and what was the other one?
Is it Fast 7 or Furious 7?
I think people will know what we're talking about. I hope.
Well, it's Furious 7, and then he's wearing the same fucking mustache in Hateful Eight. So clearly, these films were made very close to each other.
That's right. All right. He's so incredible. I love him so much.
Well, I think it's I think we can pull the veil up. I think we can talk about spoilers. Which means we can talk about plot. Bone Tomahawk, it's currently out. I know it's out in VOD.
Yes, yeah.
You can get it on Amazon.
Very wide.
It's not very wide. It's incredibly limited, which I'm sad about, because this movie, I wish to God that I've been able to see in a theater.
I think most people have. Well, most people have an internet connection, therefore it's wide.
You know what? You know what, Bill? I don't appreciate that. You bastard.
If they're listening to this podcast, chances are they have the internet.
You are degrading the art of cinema by saying that, Bill.
Quentin Tarantino is gonna
bone. Yeah, Quentin Tarantino is gonna bone tomahawk me.
Yeah, that is not a good thing. So yeah, let's talk about spoilers. So, I guess you know the thing we've been dancing around is that, so much like the Searchers, a group of people has been taken by a group of Indians. You know what? We could just call them savages because they're not even really.
Yeah.
Well, because the Indian character in this movie is like, oh no, these are no, we will.
Yeah,
not
he's like,
claim
you wouldn't
these.
Think they're any different from a native or an Indian. I think he calls himself an Indian.
I would and almost say like, they're like Wendigos.
Yeah,
well, they call them troglodytes.
Troglodytes.
So, oh, troglodytes.
That's what I was gonna mention, and so I was thinking, so troglodytes, it reminded me of the word for those little sea creatures that are shell-like.
Trilobites.
And so I looked it up, and I was like, did they just call them, like, trilobites? Like, why are they calling them trilobites? And I guess troglodyte is an actual word for, like, caveman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cave dweller, caveman. I didn't realize that, and so... Yeah, the whole movie, I was like, this is going to bug me.
Fun story. When I was in college, my friends and I would call particularly unpleasant, unattractive, or angry people troglodytes.
Well, see, like, I would just call them, like Cro-Magnons and stuff
like
that.
Cro-Mags.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, Cro-Mags. And I'm like, okay. So
I just call them mouth breathers.
These were straight trogs.
Yep, mouth breathers. Those are good.
They were trogs. So yeah, they're troglodytes. They literally live in a cave, but they're also insane, inbred, hyper-violent, languageless beasts.
They whistle through like a. You find out they have like a
throat whistle,
extra like a throat bone that they can whistle.
No. So I think
that they put something in themselves.
Yeah, I think. I don't think it's. I don't think they're doing anything. They're not putting something. I think they're modifying their windpipe. So
well, that's the thing. Yeah, because Patrick Wilson, when he kills the one, he says, "Oh, is this jewelry?" And he pulls it out.
Right.
I don't think that's like. I think that's like bone. I think
I
feel like they've taken the resonance chamber out of an animal and like stuck it into themselves. One of the guys has like tusks coming out of his cheeks.
Mm-hmm. Boars. Yeah, boars.
So they like modified themselves. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. These people are fucking crazy. Guys, this isn't a horror movie like, oh, every now and then like something's going to jump out at you. Like, in fact, the movie plays it very straight. There aren't many jump scares.
No.
Like,
nope.
But it's so brutal, and these people are so alien and fucked up, and the things they do, and just their warlike nature, and, like, they cut through our heroes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. That opening massacre, I was just like, what is going, like, we're three man down. Like,
yeah,
what's going
immediately.
On?
Oh, my God. They, like, they shoot everyone with arrows. They manage to fight them off, our heroes, and then by that point Matthew Fox is pretty much already dead. He's got his hand lopped off and everyone else has been beat to shit, and it's just, oh my God.
Well, they're introduced as basically shadow beings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're, when you see them, they're just these dark figures. It's really crazy.
They're like, they've painted themselves in the white clay of the desert and the hills they live in. They have this, like, insane circular graveyard, and it's just terrifying. And they, like, walk into a room and howl, and, guys, there is a murder in this film.
Good God.
That has haunted me.
I will say this much. What I appreciate about that murder is growing up in a dairy farm, and especially... knowing how cows are butchered, that is very accurate.
I believe it.
It is that insanely accurate.
That seemed like they had done that before, and they found that that was the easiest way.
Oh, well, it's just, yeah, when it, I didn't see it coming. It is just, oh my God.
I mean, like,
well, the great part is, so they scalp this guy that was
one
I guess
the deputies
initially.
He is somebody kind of, I mean, he's been in something before. Okay.
I don't know.
He looks really
familiar.
Yeah.
But anyways, so they scalp him. And so in most in The Revenant, you see a scalping. In another couple of movies, you see scalpings, and you never see, you always see them like pull it up and then, and cheer. And I've never, ever seen them immediately scalp him, and while he's screaming, shove it right back in his mouth. And you're like, what?
Nail it in there with a spike?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's
why are we talking about this in so much detail?
It is so graphic.
No, and like, and this is coming after some pretty, like, I guess movies have like harmed us because we believe at times that no bad can befall certain people.
Yeah.
And so like,
this has a very Game of Thrones kind of feel to it, and where it's like, no, people you like are definitely gonna die.
But like, unlike Game of Thrones, where like I've become inured to it because it just happens so much. Like, this is why a movie will always emotionally, when it comes to like deaths and things, trump a TV show. Because in the first season of Game of Thrones, the deaths meant something. The second season, they were a little less. And by now, I don't give a shit.
Right, like, yeah.
And in this movie, I've got four people that I care about. And they're all I care about. They're my world for the 2 hours that I'm watching this film. And so, until the credits roll, I'm on the edge of my seat. Because I want at least one of them to get out. And
man, we haven't even mentioned the fact that Patrick Wilson is traversing the desert on crutches.
Oh yeah,
I love the way they play that out too, because they do such a great job. And his final kind of like, or not final sequence, but the one that like really makes you feel for this character is when Matthew Fox's character like makes a sly remark. But even then I was like, that's like still kind of like he's still very hopeful. He's like talking about like seeing your wife, like he's gonna like flirt with her.
Yeah.
And then he loses his shit and like hits him, falls over, and has to have his leg like worked on even more, which basically just sidelines him for the entire last half of the film.
Well, not the entirety
just like,
of it.
Well, you know, yeah, but it's almost to the point where you're like, when is he gonna play a factor in this film at any point? Like,
well,
you're just
by that point the
like,
movie's
wow.
gotten so brutal that I think my fiance, like, I was saying something like, by this point I just want Patrick Wilson to come in and fuck up everyone.
Yep.
And she's
yep.
like, no, this movie's gonna end with us watching him starve to death in the desert. And I was like, you know what, that could happen. But at the same time, there was a part of me
gets the jump on him, or they get a jump on him, and at that moment,
it's just great.
Oh yeah, well that's the thing. Like, so we have these two brutal scenes that just like leave you like breathless and haggard, and then it slows down, and we see people start to work through things, and like in the end, you know, Patrick Wilson lives, he gets his wife back, and the Richard Jenkins character gets to come, and Kurt Russell gets to die a hero. So like, it's this really weird thing where the movie ends much in the way that you would expect it to end, but the way that you have to get there is just so harsh. And Patrick Wilson like wins because he has to go so slow.
Right.
And, that's
and because he's on opium.
he
and I'm sure the opium helps. Like, I don't know if this is because I'm on opium or because it's really
This happening. Movie is very pro-opium.
super pro opium, so much opium everywhere.
But yeah, no, I mean, like, it's just like he is amazing. Everyone in this is amazing. There's this really weird thing where it's kind of like when they're getting out of the cave, you can see that he has like murdered the two pregnant women that are with this
nope,
tribe.
Nope. No,
oh no.
No,
that would
they're
be
definitely alive.
Oh no, because he has driven a spike through their eyes.
No, I'm pretty sure that was done to them.
Yep.
That's their practice.
Oh, yeah. Are you sure? Because I thought
she says that there are blind pregnant women.
Oh, I heard that he just said that there are two pregnant women.
Nope, blind pregnant women.
I did not hear that she said they were blind. Because my assumption was that Patrick Wilson came in and was like, "All right, I'm not wasting a bullet on you."
I was listening to a podcast about it, and he was asked about that scene in particular, about their decision basically to either kill them or free them, and they don't do either. And he was like, "Well, that's what I want you to wonder about. Like, I want you to think about that kind of situation and think, what would you do in that situation?" You know?
I mean, they are definitely
alive.
Yeah, they're like wretched, wretched beings. They're just like writhing, and these like, oh, it's hellish.
But again,
yeah.
I thought that Patrick Wilson had done that to them.
Oh, no, 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 no.
It doesn't affect my enjoyment of reading of the film in any way, but okay.
Oof. And just the way, so can we touch on Kurt Russell's?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we're in spoilers, so go for it.
Oh, my God. That whole, just the way that played out. Just with the whole, because I mean, I think the thing about this movie too is that you have it's just so unpredictable. You have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. And when they brought Kurt Russell out, you're assuming that what happened to the previous guy is going to happen to him.
Right.
Yep. No, they have other creative ways of dealing with Kurt Russell, which is shoving a hot metal flask into his abdomen and just that whole, like, just him standing up and just fucking up that, I guess, chieftain? I don't know
what.
Yeah,
I think he was the alpha.
The chief?
Yeah. The boar tusks.
Just fantastic.
Well, I gotta say, like, I was really waiting for him to pull out that flask and drink some of the...
oh, my God.
I was waiting for that to happen.
That would have been so great.
I was like, he's got it. He's got it right there.
Yeah, but it's
and
empty.
And he's about to... Is it?
I would have crapped if that happened.
That's disgusting. Thank you for letting us know that.
That's how excited she would have been.
But like, so here's the thing. We're going into all this about the violence and everything, but like the important thing is that they're still grounded in character, and the movie's maintaining its character, and that's best exemplified by the ending. When Patrick Wilson, you know, they're out on the plane, they're hobbling back home, and he wants to give his wife a proper kiss, and she's like, "Yeah, but you've had that thing in your mouth." So he's like, "Oh, okay," and he wipes off his mouth and then gives her a kiss. It's like most movies wouldn't take the time to do that and show you this moment between them, and that was really awesome.
I also loved Richard Jenkins' flea circus story.
I know.
Just heartbreaking.
Richard Jenkins is going to die.
Oh, I know. Well, I did too.
Well, and remember, like, it's funny because they play it off because of what Kurt Russell had said to the guy that's basically being mutilated and torn apart limb from limb. And, you know, saying that the cavalry is on its way. We're going to avenge you and stuff like that. And, you know, of course, Richard Jenkins' character is like, "Why'd you say that?" And he's like, "Well, because if I was going to die, that's what I would want to hear." And of course, we see Lily Simmons play that off, you know, and it's just like perfect.
And then we see Richard Jenkins do it much more, you know, obviously with Kurt Russell. But then I just remembered the final line between those two, like, probably lifelong friends. Where Richard Jenkins says, you know, I'll tell your wife goodbye, and Kurt Russell says, I'll tell yours hello.
Oh,
yep.
Loved it.
And then you hear the three gunshots echoing from the mountain, and Richard Jenkins tosses the rock that he was going to use to defend them away, because he knows that they're safe.
So matter of fact, so straightforward.
One thing I love about like Richard Jenkins' character is that he's the guy that like he can't shut up throughout the film. Yes, but he's also the guy that like in an argument he always has to have like the last word, and they kind of get fed up with his shit, you know, towards the middle of that journey where they, I think Kurt Russell at one point is just like, go to sleep, like, quit talking, go to sleep. And then you hear Richard Jenkins like start to pipe up and he's like, no, go to sleep. So you're just like, yes.
All right. Well, yeah. So obviously we love this film. Like we said, out on VOD now. Check it the goddamn hell out. Well, this movie's so amazing.
I really wish that Cowboys and Aliens could have been even half this good.
Oh my god. Well, it would have been rated R. Like
Cowboys and Aliens?
Cowboys and Aliens was, here's the thing. The brutality in Cowboys and Aliens came out of nowhere, but was so much more discordant than this movie. Like, I had a real problem with the amount of violence in Cowboys and Aliens, and this movie has infinitely more violence, and yet I was totally cool with it because it played it straight.
Mm-hmm.
And Cowboys and Aliens was like, this is a stupid, goofy movie.
Oh, again,
P.S.,
yeah.
Some horror shit's about to go down.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, that's kind of what I assumed going into Bone Tomahawk. Like I said before about how like faux camp, like faux B movie.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I thought, like I said, I thought this was going to be kind of a goofy, weird mashup, and it turned into just like a Western with a nice little horror cherry on top.
How perfect is the title Bone Tomahawk?
Oh,
I was waiting for like that to pay off too.
He decapitates the guy with the boar horns with a bone tomahawk.
Is it a bone tomahawk though, or is it a bone blade?
It's hard to tell. Does it really matter? It's like an axe.
Bone blade doesn't sound nearly as dramatic as bone tomahawk.
No, I love the name, but yeah. I was just waiting for see a tomahawk made out of.
I said that at some point. I was like, I'm just waiting for Patrick Wilson to pick up a bone tomahawk and go to fucking town on these troglodytes.
One thing I love about the film is that so you're seeing Patrick Wilson slowly creep up on them, right? And you're like, okay, he's not climbing that like entryway, so he's not going in that direction. And as I was thinking it, he gets to the main area where he's very obviously sees, you know, shit has gone wrong, and he's like, not the way I'm going.
Well, that's
the crazy
thing.
Around and he's like, there's got to be a back entrance. And you're like, yes.
Kurt Russell at some point says, like, the one thing we've got on these savages is that we're, like, smarter than they are. And then they proceed to act completely stupid. But, like,
they do.
The stupid kind of way that you expect a cowboy to. And, yeah.
Well, I got to say, though, like, when they're sitting there kind of trying to come up with a plan of attack, right? And then out of nowhere, they get ambushed. And you're like, someone gets hit with an arrow and you're like, what? And then someone else gets hit with a rock and then all hell breaks loose. And you're just like, whoa. I thought this was like their planning stage and where they were going to like, you know, come up with an idea and like, and no, they're just like, what just happened?
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that kind of played it off well. So yeah, I mean, they do kind of rush into it headlong a little bit, but they were gonna try to plan at that point, and they obviously didn't end up working.
They should have planned much earlier. So yeah, Bone Tomahawk, one of the best of the year, like definitely.
Oh yeah.
Check it out on Amazon. As Bill said, it's super wide, guys. It's everywhere.
If you have a phone, you can watch it.
Oh my god,
don't watch it on your
phone.
Bill, you need to have your film critic's license taken away. telling people to watch movies on phones.
Jesus Christ. All right. Well, that's it for this week. Join us next week. We will actually be talking about two movies. One of them will be Chi-Raq, and the other will be In the Heart of the Sea. One by Spike Lee.
Looking forward to that one.
What was that?
You're looking forward to that one, Brian.
I am totally looking forward to that. If anyone would like a spoiler for my opinion.
Speaking of comebacks,
you can check it out on the film stage right now.
That's got Wesley Snipes.
Oops. Yeah, Chi-Raq has Wesley Snipes. In the Heart of the Sea does not have Wesley Snipes.
God, if only.
This is actually going to be fun because it's two directors that I can't think of more diametrically opposed directors. You have Ron Howard.
Oh, is that Spike. Ron Howard?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Chi-Raq is Ron Howard.
No. I've seen Chi-Raq. I know exactly who directed that.
Yeah, you've got Spike Ron Lee <Howard. laughs> and Ron Howard, which is like, if you had to choose, I'm not even going to say it. They're just so diametrically opposed that it's hilarious.
Well, you're talking like Splash versus like Let the Right One In. I mean, it's...
Wait, Let the Right One In?
Let the Right One Do the Right Thing. Good God, it's getting
I was about to say, Let the Right One In. That's a really good movie. It is
10:45, so we can...
Did you guys not know that Spike Lee tried to Let the Right One In?
I wish he had. Oh my goodness. Wait, didn't he direct the Old Boy remake?
Yeah, he did.
Ugh. Mm-hmm.
That wasn't a joint. He didn't say that was a joint, so we don't really count that. I'm serious.
No, he didn't.
Call it a Spike Lee joint, so that's not something we count.
Someone else rolled that joint.
God. All right, well, that's it for today. So let us tell you where it can be found online. Amanda, why don't you start us off?
You can find me on Twitter at MediaWaltz. You can also find me on Letterboxd, MediaWaltz, and my blog, Steel Cinema, on WordPress.
All right, Bill Graham.
You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG, and you can find me writing on the film stage.
And you can find me at my personal site, dearfilm.net, as well as Twitter at Brian J. Rowan and thefilmstage.com. Review of Bone Tomahawk on Dear Film, review of In the Heart of the Sea, currently on the film stage. You can feel free to read that, because I literally could only say a quarter of the things I had to say about In the Heart of the Sea in that review. And Leftovers, Season 3, hopefully coming very soon. So that's it for this week. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Like I said, join us next week. Have a great night.